maybe it's my fault. Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't.
Weston, another three.
Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Off the glass in the end, one for Jaden.
Maybe I made you think that every shot I took was a game winner. As my game was built on flash and not fire. Maybe it's my fault that you didn't see that failure gave me strength, that my pain was my motivation. Maybe I led you to believe that basketball was a God-given gift and not something I worked for every single day of my life. Maybe I destroyed the game. Or maybe you're just making excuses.
Allen, right side take, off the glass. Toilet bowl swirl falls in. Ray Allen the third, his first collegiate points of his career.
Welcome back to another episode of Cam's Corner. Today is a very special day. We're capping off season three with the 100th episode. I just wanted to give a quick thank you to everyone who has tuned in over the last 2.5 years, who's also been a guest and joined alongside me for these episodes. I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. My guest today is joining me for the third time in Cam's Corner history, an assistant coach and head of video operations for the Salt Lake City Stars, an NBA G League affiliate of the Utah Jazz, Johnson, Rhode Island native like myself, Justin Mazzulla. Justin, thank you again for hopping on for the third time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Of course. And, you know, we've hopped on the pod. We haven't hopped on the pod since the middle of your first year coaching with URI, your first real coaching experience at the graduate assistant level. For those that didn't see that episode, Justin was just coming off a conference championship with Vermont. Next year, quick turnaround with URI. So, again, for those that didn't see that episode, Justin, just kind of recap that year of your first experience at the coaching level.
At URI?
URI.
URI is a unique experience. Coming straight off of playing, you have to figure out how to navigate between being the same age as the players that are on the floor, some of them, and then also when relationship building, finding a fine line between being a friend and being a coach at the same time. How to be a mentor and how to also be there because you've been in their shoes before. So just going through different relationship building tactics to understand how to be able to go about those certain relationships that you're able to coach, but you're able to still be a mentor at the same time.
Yeah. And fresh out of school too, at the graduate level, you're kind of similar in age to those guys. So did you kind of feel a connect as far as what they're going through mentally and what types of work, you know, things that you could teach them at the level that you were at?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times it's what I tried to do is I allowed many of the guys to try and figure it out for themselves, because that's when they can find like what works for them, because I have a certain blueprint, but some things worked for me that might not work for others. So just being able to guide and just throw in little pointers here and there on how to be able to prevail through the hardships of a long college season. But I would just throw in a couple pointers here and there because I knew what they were going through. But I also, if I didn't go through some of the things that I went through in college, I necessarily wouldn't have grown into like the person on my last day of college. So it's all good stuff when you look back at it, and just trying to keep someone on the path. Don't let them get too far off.
Yeah. And like I said, you've joined the podcast 3 times now. This is the third time. The first time you were at Vermont. Second time, again, we talked about you were at URI, and now you're with the Jazz in Salt Lake City. Yeah. So, you know, once basketball season concludes after URI, after your first season with URI, what's your mindset as far as what's to come? You know, did you have a plan once that season was over?
I mean, I'm a planner, so I technically always have a plan.
Yeah.
But sometimes plans don't always go as you want them to, but that's okay, because that's what you learn in the journey. Mm-hmm. But I did have a plan. I wanted to get into the NBA, and I just started emailing everybody and anybody that I could find an email, and then I would try and like just email whoever for an opportunity, and LinkedIn, and I was also grateful enough to receive a coaching offer, an assistant coaching offer with Vermont. That was a challenge for me. That was my first like coaching challenge to I was blessed enough to receive the offer, but I want my eyes were set on NBA. So that was my first like coaching decision challenge that I was blessed to go through and grateful to go through. And I love Vermont with all my heart, but I just wanted to be in the NBA because that's where I want to be. So I just started emailing and finding people, and luckily I was enough to find the head video coordinator of the Jazz, Anthony Beaumont, and the rest is history. Here we are today.
So you didn't reach out to Vermont. They just directly hit you up and was like, we want you on our staff.
I mean, it's not like I don't talk to them all the time. Yeah. So like, it's not like they randomly hit me up. I mean, we're always talking. So it just was within the conversation. But it just was what I didn't want at the time.
Yeah. And in that same time frame of things happening, I don't know if I was the one to break the news. I know that my tweet kind of blew up a little bit, but you know, remembering that time and when, you know, the news officially broke that you were going to join the Jazz and start off your journey in the NBA, you know, what was the reaction of your family members? Who was like the first couple of people you told, and you know, how did people react to that?
First couple of people I told, I mean, I told my friends like Mike Vendetti, and people in my circle, and I mean, they're pretty grateful, pretty excited. Told my cousins, my brother, my sister. But I would speak to my brother based on how to make a decision when going about these things, weighing between going to Vermont or going to the NBA. So I told my family, and I mean, the reactions are always gratefulness and blessed. Never too high, never too low, but still blessed and grateful.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll definitely talk about like Joe and how he's been able to mentor you through this process as well. For those that don't know, that just tuning in, maybe Joe was the first ever guest on the podcast, obviously getting ready for the finals now, but, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later, but, the relationship with Danny Ainge, I feel like comes up a lot. I know he was a former executive with the Celtics, and he helped out your dad, Dan, a lot when he was sick and going through everything. And, Joe was somebody that he could go to, which was great. And now he's, CEO of basketball operations with the Jazz. So I guess just kind of talk about your relationship with him and how that kind of built over time.
I mean, anybody who encounters like Danny, the relationship is pretty much always positive, and you are always learning and you're always tested. And he's a great person to be around. I wouldn't necessarily say like when you see a lot of these people like in the front office, you have great relationships, but you also that you just are in the environment, you're in all of it. So you're not necessarily like sitting down all the time, like having like food or talking or stuff like that. It's like many small interactions, but all the small interactions I've had with Danny are always positive, encouraging, learning moments. And he likes to challenge who you are as a coach. He likes to challenge your philosophies as a coach. So you're always learning. It's always positive. And he's always gonna tell a story or two, which you can gain a lot of knowledge from, or it's just cool that he has that much stories like that date back to the Celtics or date back to his past in different professional sports and around so many professional athletes. So it's really, really positive, really loving. But that's Danny.
Yeah. What was your first few days on the job like, you know, meeting people like Danny, having those like relationships, like you said, you're not gonna be talking to them every day, but every single day you're making a new connection, you're meeting and networking. You know, you're doing a lot of things. You're not just as a coach, but you're doing video stuff as well. So talk about, I guess, the responsibilities and what those first few days were like.
I mean, my first few days I spent time with the summer league team. So like I was able to be full-fledged, like rebounding and helping out a lot because hands are a little shorter when it comes to summer league. Mm-hmm. Staff's a little smaller. So, I mean, it's just like from day one, they trust you and they give you responsibilities and you're in charge of like executing those responsibilities. First couple of days were just learning, like, you only know what you know, but you have to learn what they do, what the Jazz does and workouts and how to rebound a certain way, how to defend a professional a certain way. because you want to find the balance between going hard enough but not going too hard to where you can hurt the athlete. Like, there's many, many lessons that you learn on your first couple of days that not necessarily like are huge lessons, but they're important lessons to know how to go about NBA practice or go about video room stuff, like sorters and software stuff that you need to know. So it was just a lot of falling to the back and learning by example.
Yeah, so as a player, I'm sure you did it at the high school level too, but definitely in college playing at a high Division I level, watching film and depicting film as a player, do you use like the same kind of mindset and skill set going into that as a coach, or is there like a different like adjustment that you did once you got to the league, or is like watching film and breaking film down with players kind of like the same as it was when you played?
Well,
do you look at it like the same way, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, because you don't want to fully, when we're looking at a bunch of film, we're looking at a lot of different situations, a lot of different scenarios. We're looking at switches, blitzes, like a lot of different defensive stuff, a lot of offensive stuff. Like, there's a lot that we're watching. But when you're watching it with a player, you're only fixated on what necessarily your base principles are. And it's very simplified when you give it to a player, because you want them to improve on that. So if the player is like in their low man positioning and you have a couple clips to show like they need to be pulled in a little bit more closer to defending the ball rather than like closer to defending their man to help, like simplifying complexities and helping the athlete understand like the base principles and continuing to rep out the small, simple stuff. So like, yeah, you all look for the same thing in the whole video, like if everyone were to watch video, but like when it's your job, you're doing 1,000 stuff. When you're communicating to a player, you're talking about 2 things. So It's just very simplified when you get to a player.
Yeah, I know that when Joe came on was probably about like 2.5 years now, like I said, since the first one, but I remember he told me his first year, like he had like a group of guys and it was like a lot of like the younger guys that he started off like kind of focusing on when he was with the Celtics as an assistant. Is it kind of similar in that sense that what your responsibilities are? Are you looking at a certain group of guys or is it kind of like the vast majority?
Yeah, I mean, so when you're with the G League, your staff is a lot smaller. So It's a lot more hands on deck and you wear many different hats. We have a great staff on the Stars and each person would have kind of their individual group, but sometimes like a coach would have a scout, so they're not able to get to them. So then that's when I can step in and help out a little bit. So we all kind of have to necessarily be on the same page and be a free flowing staff when it comes to players. Like you have your said players, but you also are a community trying to help people grow. So if we're all on the same page of what principles we like to like hone in on, and then this certain player needs to get better at this, we all are on the same page with that. Mm-hmm. So I'll be able to step in, show a couple things on film, and then also like show it in workouts and help in workouts. So that's kind of how you help out and assist your staff members when you're in the video room.
Yeah, and piggybacking off that, those last two questions, I mean, what do you feel, I guess, personally, was your biggest adjustment jumping into the league so fast, and any differences that you saw like right off the jump from your past experiences coaching?
I didn't have many past experiences coaching. I was only being a GA. It's pretty tough because a GA is a GA. Like, you only have a certain amount of responsibility. So coming into a new role where you're basically an extension of the coaching staff, a lot of the things that I've learned, I don't even know if they're describable because I didn't know much going into this position. And then at the end of the year, I was like, wow, I learned like so much. But not necessarily things that because I only knew what I knew in the beginning. And then at the end, I know way more than I knew at the start. But for example, if I had like 2 examples to show like how much I've grown, would probably be first how to run a workout with professional athletes. Like, that's a big one. And the importance of keeping it simple but still playing but still have complexity to the simplicity of the drills. If you're going to do spot shots, like 10 at each spot, don't just have somebody shoot 10 shots because they're professionals. They can make 10 threes in a row. Like, mix in, like, okay, if you miss one, it's minus one. If you miss two, it's minus three. Like, just a game math to mentally prepare the athlete, not necessarily have to be so much physical attributes. That'd be my first one. And my second one would probably be you don't have to rush in this field. Like, a lot of people, especially like younger managers or GAs or stuff, they try and like think like, how can I get into the league? How can I like constantly like work? But the importance of stillness and being where your feet are and learning where you are at in the presentness, like being present in your position, it goes unspoken in the power of actually just learning what you don't know. And don't skip steps. So I learned, like, me going to the G League was the best thing that's ever happened to me because I was able to learn so many things that I don't know if I necessarily would have learned if I was in a different position, like with the Jazz. Because they have like 100, they have like 20 people on their staff. So your job is a little bit more simpler, but you have like a good deal of responsibility. But in the G League, you have a lot of responsibility that you're learning each and every step to each and everything. Like, I had my own scouts. I had my own team. Like, I had some of my own players. Like, I had a lot of different things that not everyone gets to get that experience. So being still within your positioning and don't chase the title, just be present where you are. I think that's like one of the biggest things I learned.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to look at. I mean, I haven't really, I've talked to a few like broadcasters in the G League, and obviously God Sham God Jr. Sham, he was, I think he came on twice. He talked a lot about, you know, kind of like the ins and outs of the G League and things like that. So it's cool to kind of get like the other side of the game and not just like the NBA, but I ask a lot of players and broadcasters as well, like, their welcome to the league moment, kind of something that took him back and been like, wow, I'm like, I'm here, like, I'm starting my journey and I'm kind of getting a kickstarter off the ground. If you were to think back and say like my welcome to the NBA moment, what do you think it would be? Like a story that you'll kind of never forget once you look back at how your journey started.
Yeah, I never got asked that question before, so I never really thought about it. So I think I need like a second to think about welcome to the league moment. Shoot. I want to say every moment was a welcome to the league moment. You can't say that.
It's true though. I mean, the to be at that level, it's like, for me to see you guys where you guys are at now, it's like super inspiring for me to try to get to that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally understand. Many times you can get lost in like where you are. So yeah. I don't necessarily sometimes think about like the simplicity of like, what was my welcome to the league moment? Cause I'm always chasing like hunger sometimes. Like, I'm always hungry to
for sure
move on. But I would say probably like one of my welcome to the league moments was watching training camp and just how great these professionals are.
Yeah.
Like being able to see people shoot the ball at such a high clip and so effortlessly, like you start to look and you're like, oh my gosh, they're really good. Mm. Like, I worked out every day in my life and I don't even know if I can even get to like shooting 15 threes in a row and making 15 threes in a row. Like, they're so effortlessly good and so talented that it's just beautiful to watch. So being able to be like in training camp and seeing like Jordan Clarkson just be so fluid with the ball or be so like not think, like, these guys aren't thinking, they're just doing. I think that's like one of the biggest things for me, is that these dudes are literally just like allowing themselves to just flow through the game of basketball with no thinking. Mm. That's one of the best ones. Because in college, there's a lot of thinking. There's a lot of like things going on, and obviously, like these athletes are thinking, but these athletes are like just like shooting the ball unconsciously, or like just coming off pick and rolls and seeing reads on the backsides is just so fluid, and it's beautiful to watch. I think that would be a big one.
Yeah, and I remember asking Joe, kind of the same thing as like when he was first starting off, like, do those younger guys kind of remind him of him when he was playing in college? And he was like, no, they all worked harder than I did. Like, they're just so much better at what they do. And when I worked for Channel 12 last summer, and I was able to go to like a handful of practices and like just watch like the Celtics just practice, it's like there's so much of a jump from college to like that next step in the league. And when you look back at it, is it did you ever think as a player, obviously your mindset is you want to make it to the league, but now that you're in the coaching seat, is it like, wow, these guys are just that much better when you look at it? Kind of like similar to what you just said.
I don't necessarily want to say, I don't want to discredit like college athletes are great too. Like
Yeah, at any level, yeah.
I went to a mid-major, so like there was a lot of way better athletes than me, like that went to Duke and all these. Like there's a lot of great talented athletes out there. I think what separates just like the high talented college and the high talented professionals is just like obviously they're some of them are size and God gifted abilities go a long way 100%. I don't know, just being able to do some of these things that the professional athletes do, like you necessarily can't teach all the time, you know? Like
Yeah.
these are, like I said, God-given abilities to a lot of these professional athletes that make them so good. And everyone can have the same work ethic and the same determination and drive and stuff as like that. I think it's so cool to see the work of God that he puts into these athletes of just being able to do things that you can't teach. Like a lot of them, you just can't teach it. They just do it. Like they'll just do something in the game and they'll be like, how'd you do that? I don't know. I just did it.
Yeah.
Like you can't teach that. You just have to just get to the basics, keep it fundamental, but allow the athlete to be the athlete that they are.
Right. And you see the ups and downs of these guys every day, like day in and day out. For you personally, I guess like an obstacle you faced throughout this year that, was tough to overcome. Obviously, of course, you overcame it, but something that you look back at and was like, man, that was something that I had to really work for to kind of get over the hump.
Repeat that one more time.
Yeah,
Sorry.
so just I guess like I said, athletes, you see like the ups and downs of athletes every day at the coaching side. And for you personally, like an obstacle, like a down that you kind of had to overcome throughout your first year, something that you look back at and you're like, man, I really had to work harder at this particular thing than really anything else over this first year.
Like I said, like going in, I only knew what I knew. So I tried to put in the same amount of effort and hard work into each and everything that I didn't know of. And I just started to learn different patterns along the way of how to be efficient and effective, but still being able to be detail oriented in my scouts, when I'm talking to coaches, when I'm talking to players. Like these are little like moments that I always tried to fix and be better at. But one thing I would probably be like doing scouts, and presenting to a team of guys that already know what's going on, but being able to like take a game plan and make adjustments and stuff like that. I think that's something I had to work on tremendously is like your vocabulary when you speak to these guys in a scout, not be, having way too much. Like stats, like everyone loves stats, but the player necessarily doesn't want to see like seven numbers up there. So just being able to like how to go about a scouting report was probably one of my biggest things, and how to form a scouting report was the coolest, but the biggest thing I had to really focus on change and focus on growth with that.
Yeah, we look at like the adjustment period, but a plus for you that we talked a lot about when you were a player, and of course, like how you go about your entire life is your leadership quality. The way that you hold yourself as a player, as a coach. I guess being a leader as a player and then, towards the end of your career, when did you start to realize that you wanted to be a coach and you wanted to take your mindset and your knowledge of the game to the coaching side and not continue to play?
Probably like sophomore year of college.
That early, really?
Yeah, I mean, I was not that good at basketball, but I was good enough to and smart enough to find my way on the court. I worked extremely hard as a player.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't have a lot of qualities that a lot of these dudes have. Like I was good enough to be on the court, but I wasn't good enough to continuously play. And I knew that. I was aware of that. And I loved coaching because I love like helping people be better at their craft. That's kind of like my biggest thing is I love to help others in coaching and in life and in guidance, in relationship building. Like I liked all of that stuff. So I knew kind of like sophomore year of college that like coaching was for me. And I was the type of player that always was vocal, always leading, always helping, whether I was a point guard or not. And someone that really helped me was Coach Becker at Vermont. Just being able to like find my voice and find my leadership role and then them having such a great system at Vermont opened up my eyes more to being a coach because like those guys at Vermont, Coach Kyle, Coach Ryan, Coach Chris, Coach Becker, Coach Bryson, like all those dudes inspire me every day to like be a coach because they helped me be the best that I can be. And then that kind of like, I wanted to reciprocate that energy. And now I want to help others be like the best version of themselves. So that kind of like sparked my coaching mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always wanted to be an impactful coach through time. And I knew like there wasn't any sense of going to play overseas because I would just be prolonging like my basketball career that just didn't need to happen. I was so fixated when I was a player of winning a championship that I wanted to win the championship. And like, that was my number one thing. And senior year being able to win the championship I had and going to the NCAAs was like the number one thing I wanted to accomplish. And I didn't have anything else I wanted to do after that. So I get to go out with a bang and I was grateful and blessed enough to be able to do that. And then that was the end of my basketball career. I didn't need to prove anything else.
Yeah. And you know, someone, I mean, I talk about every day, Coach Dan, of course, your dad. Now that you're at this level and you're at this level in the NBA, you've got a full year under your belt. You look back at how you go through things, like a day-to-day process. Do you have any like mannerisms of his when you do things that you think of him and like, oh yeah, that's something my dad would have done, or that's something my dad would have said to somebody else?
I mean, yeah, like that's me and Joe's like everyday life.
Yeah.
And my sister, like there'll be times where we'll just say something and like, I don't know, we'll just say something to a player and then you'll walk away and then you'll be like, my dad would say that 100 out of 100 times. But many things that I acquire from him, obviously, is my work ethic, my determination, my commitment to the game, my love for the game, all of my great qualities that have to do with hard work, determination, and perseverance stem from his teachings, as you know, and his tough love. And so I think basically who I am today is from his teachings. And there's not like one small moment. It's every day in my life, I feel that his two teachings.
Yeah. And whenever I talk to you and, you know, the handful of times I've talked to Joe, and when I see Joe like speaking at press conferences, it's like, I can hear him. It's crazy. It's tough to explain. And I know that Joe's been in this position for a while now, but every time I see him and every time we're able to connect, it's like, it's still like just super inspiring for me to see that, because you guys are from the same place that I'm from and I'm trying to get to that point at some point in my career. And just to see the steps, the little things that you guys meticulate and go through every single day makes me want to push harder like each day to get to that point. So I guess going off that mentor, that like, you know, how Dan kind of mentored you as a player and then you kind of have those same kind of mannerisms as a coach. As far as Joe, and now that you're at this league, you guys are both in the league, talk about just kind of how he's mentored you as a coach now, outside of being a player and your first year in the league's all done, and the stuff that he's been able to tell you.
I mean, well, it first started when I was going to go either to Vermont or take a leap of faith and go into to the G League or the NBA. That was kind of the first mentorship, and that was like, it's not many coach to coach. It's more like we're very religious, and it's just a leap of faith. And a lot of things, like as a coach, you think like you have so much control over things, but many times you have to take leaps of faith. And that was kind of the biggest thing that he taught me in the beginning is the importance of faith when it comes to coaching. And you'll be right where you're supposed to be. And if you just go with your gut and your instinct and you trust God and you have the faith to do that, that was kind of the first coaching-esque thing that he taught me. And then the second one would probably be I think availability and adaptability are kind of the two biggest things as well. Like always being available for help and always wanting and gaining to help someone, because it's always a learning experience, and always being adaptable, because obviously you have your own coaching philosophy, you have your own way of doing things, but your way is not the only way that's right. And just finding other ways that work and different ways to skin a cat and how to implement that into your philosophy and then change your coaching mind and stuff like that. So we don't have many conversations about coaching, because many times when we're out of coaching, we don't really like to talk about basketball. But there are small moments that carry a lot of weight that you just have to take and take into account and then figure the rest out later. He does a great job like distancing himself, that he doesn't want to like tarnish my coaching philosophy. So he doesn't add much detail to like our coaching interactions, because he wants me to build my own philosophy. So that's another way, is by allowing me to gain my own coaching knowledge through experience rather than him giving me a blueprint on how to be successful.
Yeah, and I remember when you played at GW, you had the opportunity to play against him when he was coaching one of the teams that you guys were playing. And did that same feeling kind of occur when the Celtics faced off against the Jazz, and you guys had that like that moment where you're both there in that same environment,
Not yet. Mm-hmm. It was definitely cool, and I was definitely grateful for the opportunity, but I didn't have that same. Not yet. I'll just say that.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll come throughout the career, but I thought that was really cool. I saw a picture of you guys like hugging like through the tunnel, and
spent some time together and spoke and just reflected on how cool it is. And we definitely don't take those situations for granted, because there's not many times where you get to have two brothers that are in the same building on two separate sides of an NBA team. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely grateful for the opportunity, but there's more to come.
Yeah, for sure. And how proud are you as a brother to see him at this stage, the youngest coach to make it to the finals since 1969, I think it was, of Bill Russell. Like, how proud are you of him?
I mean, I'm extremely proud. Like, it's really cool. It still hasn't necessarily, like, it doesn't ring, like, I don't know. It doesn't ring it very hard yet, maybe. Like, we're super grateful. We're super obviously blessed to be in these situations. I'm super proud of him. He works tremendously hard. But I always want to beat him. So there's a little bit of like, I'm happy for him, but I want to be in that position too, so we can compete at the highest level as well. But aside from all that and stripping all that, it's cool to see the impact that he has on the Celtics community and the impact that he has on the players and his staff and the people around him. And that's really good for him, and that's really good for our family, on how cool it is to go from Johnston, Rhode Island to the NBA Finals. I think that's amazing.
Does that attention to his name kind of like, has that hit you guys yet? Is it kind of like that all the eyes are on him, or is it kind of just, you know, it's just another day?
I don't know. It might hit different for my sister because she's in Rhode Island and she's always in the environment and she's being in Johnston, and then everyone is like super grateful and like to know like the Missoula name and to have been so impacted and have such a close relationship with my dad like in Johnston. So like it's a little bit different from my sister maybe, because she has to feel it every, like when I lived in Rhode Island, I felt the Boston like energy of like hopefully they win, and then they didn't win against the Heat. Like I felt all that because being so close to Boston. But now that I'm like on the other side of the country, I feel it. I want them to win, but I don't feel the pressure as much as what they feel on the East Coast, which I'm happy for.
Yeah, and I guess kind of to cap everything off, I mean, just talk a little bit about what it means more so for the town of Johnston, for the people like that knew your dad, like you just said, and that saw Joe, and that saw you, Joe, and your sister grow up in this town.
What it means, I think we, like Joe said in my dad's eulogy, let's be motivated by his life. I think this is a great like motivation for Joe, especially because he hasn't been able to actually like sit in his sorrows as much, because ever since my dad died, he acquired like so much more responsibility and stuff like that. So I think this path, now that he has his philosophies and his identity, I think it's a way to for Joe to be motivated to achieve something greater than himself and something great for his background, his community. And he's just motivated by my dad's life. How that impacts our family and how that impacts the town of Johnston is just, it just goes to show the impact of how much a community can have on a group of people. And my dad gave a lot to the community, but the community has given a lot to us, and being able to empower us and being able to support our family, being able to like love our family the way people do, that empowers us to continue to fight and keep going. And that, and Joe carries a lot of weight of being from Johnston. I carry a lot of weight from being from Johnston, because we are representations of our community, and we are a byproduct of the love and the faith that the community of Johnston gives us. And being able to show up every day in a position like this, being from such a small town of a lot of love and passion and determination, allows us to continue to fight to be the best versions of ourselves for our community. So I think it carries a lot of weight for Joe to be able to, when and if God bless he can, to hold that trophy up, knowing that his background lies where a lot of people love and support our family, like goes a really long way.
Yeah, and I wear Johnston proud on my sleeve, and I tell you all the time how much your dad meant to me, and you know, the lessons and again the teachings that you talk about, how much it's instilled in me, and I'm sure instilled in the entire town and all the people that he was able to interact with, of course at the coaching level. But like I said, to see you and Joe at this level, to see like the messages that you just portrayed in this episode, and how Joe speaks to his players in the media, nothing's changed. It's always the same thing every time, and that's truly inspiring for me to look at as far as trying to be a byproduct of Johnston and get to that point at some point in my career. So nothing but thanks. And I appreciate it again, Justin, the third time hopping on Camp's Corner. When I look back at the whole journey, you were the fifth, I think the first five episodes, you were like the fifth episode to start things off. So to see from like the growth from point A, from when we started to now, I think it's incredible. So nothing but thanks. And anything you want to end off, cap off the episode with, episode 100.
How's the following? How's that? Your following's pretty large.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going up a lot. Yeah, for sure. So once I started, so I mean, you knew I when I was at URI, I did a lot of broadcasting stuff, and I was able to work with Barstool Rhody, and I would put my phone up to my computer, and I would film myself calling the games. So if something big were to happen, or like a quick, you know, 15, 30 second clip, I would split the screen, have my reaction, have the video, and put like the little like closed captionings, like the kind of like the TikTok split screen reels or whatever. And some of those blew up. Like I remember Ray Allen's first bucket last year, as a walk on freshman, that hit like, I think 500,000 views. So to have that on Cam's Corner to represent not only the podcast, me as a broadcaster, that really kind of set the bar high and grew the channel a lot. And definitely, like, whenever I'm around in Rhode Island, a lot of people recognize me for it. But the goal is to never get big, but the goal, I've met so many people and talked to so many people that I never thought possible, from NBA guys to athletes, coaches, broadcast, like everybody, like a whole range. I thought it was just going to be like guys from Rhode Island. It's grown so much bigger than that. And I credit, again, that to you guys, the people that first started this off.
Yeah, that's so really cool.
Yeah.
Probably like two things. First thing is you have a Brunson jersey hanging on the back of your, so I don't know necessarily if you want to keep on talking about Joe and the Celtics. And the second thing is, I think you should also give yourself a lot of credit. And you say many times, I've heard you say many times that you aspire to be a byproduct of Johnston and stuff like that. And you've been going at this for 2.5 years. You've had a lot of success with it. I think understanding that where you are is you being able to be a byproduct of Johnston still. And people listen to your voice. People listen to your podcast. You get many great guests on here. So just understanding that, celebrate the small wins, and you are a byproduct of Johnston, even if you don't feel that you are. So continuously giving yourself credit and giving yourself grace will help you. Not, you can still chase wanting to be even higher and higher, but understanding that where you are right now is also the best version of yourself, and you are doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you're in the right position. So be grateful that you are a byproduct, that you're able to make it this far 2.5 years, because we were on the fifth episode not knowing where it would go. And now you're 2.5 years in and you're having the same elevated podcast questions, and you've gotten way better than day one. So understanding that you are a byproduct and where you are is right where you're supposed to be.
I appreciate that, Justin. Again, episode 100 of Cam's Corner, capping off season 3 at Cam's One Corner on all podcast platforms, all social media. And we'll see you guys in the next episode of Cam's Corner. Season 4 will start very soon. Justin, thank you again.
No problem.